is SMC. If it's about school marketing and communications, you'll find it here. It's Insight Applied.
Hello, school marketers, and welcome to SMC. If it's about school marketing and communications, we'll talk about it here. I'm Charlie Morn, and this is episode 155 for Wednesday, the 1st of May, 2019. Joining me in this podcast are Rita and Jiggles. How are you both?
Very good.
Great. How is it May?
It is the 1st of May. It is rolling around very, very quickly. Later, we will also be joined by a special guest, Em, who will be joining us on our deep dive on prospectuses. So let's get stuck in.
This is SMC. It's Insight Applied.
So to our first piece of making news, and this is something that we've been debating in the office at the moment. Over in the UK, the cosmetic brand Lush is stepping away from its social media channels. And this was raised in an article from John McCarthy in The Drum. So go to the show notes and check those out to read a little bit more. But essentially, the company is stepping away from Instagram, is stepping away from Facebook, and they've got a large number of followers. So, I mean, on Instagram, 569,000, on Facebook, 423,000. And the official company sort of statement said, increasingly, social media is making it harder and harder for us to talk to each other directly, and we're tired of fighting algorithms. They cite organic reach dying and finding it harder to reach their customers and their audience. But this is a big brand and definitely one that should be, you would have thought, connected to social media. So guys, is social media dead? Should schools be walking away from social media?
Very controversial. Very interesting, actually, as well. Look, I think it's very different depending on the type of industry that you're working in. A company as massive and as global as Lush has very high brand awareness. So I think they've already established themselves extremely well within the marketplace. So they have the luxury of being able to do that. Again, I think schools are very different. My answer is, please don't walk away from social media schools. I feel quite strongly about that, actually, just for growing your brand awareness.
Yeah, absolutely. And I suppose for Lush's case, I mean, they've got, as you say, it's global. They've got this budget where they can, I mean, they're going to take the conversation offline. They're going to take it to their own communities. I mean, it's sort of something they cited. But I mean, really, you've got to be where your audience is, don't you? I mean, for Lush, they can afford to.
Completely, absolutely. Budget is always a massive factor, particularly for schools. I mean, they would have a huge budget and they'd be able to do, you know, billboards and all that kind of activity, even, you know, activations in shopping centres, which some of you may have come across as well, which can require quite a large investment. The real luxury, the real great thing about social media for schools is that you can do it really quite cheaply. So I see that as a major plus.
Yeah, for sure. So for schools that, so obviously on a bit of a tighter budget than Lush, a global cosmetic brand, that it's going to be a cost-effective way of reaching your audience. But John, schools are going to have a more limited and more focused reach, aren't they? I mean, they're not trying to take over the world.
Well, that's right. I mean, with your school, you have a specific area in which you operate that you're going to have specific demographics and parents that you're going to be targeting. You're not going to be targeting someone on the other side of the country or the other side of the state or the city for that matter, or unlikely. But Lush is targeting everyone everywhere. So that's where a really big difference lies, I think. And that's important to note.
I think what was interesting for me in the bigger conversation about brands moving off from social media is that since social media started, and we had a big conversation about the word content last episode, is that with social media that we've got to this point now where, I mean, I think one of these articles cites that it's, so for Lush, if you've got one brand, you're on 5 different social media platforms in 25 different countries, posting 3 times a week. So 20,000 pieces of content per year just to get out on social. And that's not including advertising. That's huge. But that's obviously crazy. That's Lush. That's not a school. So I know that it's all relatable and schools are also pressed in terms of resources and time. But for a school marketer going, maybe let's just walk away from social, or a principal saying it's too hard, it's not actually that hard to do it well, is it?
No, it's not at all. I think if you're looking at this example of Lush going, see, look, they don't need to be on social media. We don't need to either. That's just an excuse. You don't need to put out 20,000 pieces of content a year to do a good job on social media. It's a lot simpler once you get into it than I think you might realize.
Okay, so when it comes to the planning, what are the sort of processes and procedures that school marketers can go, you know what, I'm really pressed for time, we're wondering whether to even be on social. What are the little things that they can do well?
Keep it simple. I think just maybe start with one social channel. If you feel like your prospective parents are on Facebook, start there. Just do consistent, simple, small posts, helpful information, content, share stuff that's on your website. Keep your messaging clear, good imagery, and don't overdo it. Just get into it and give it a try and see how you go and see where you can go from there.
So something that we talk about a lot is about having that consistency of voice and language. So again, school marketer, ideally in the ideal world, everything will be flowing through that one voice. But I mean, Rita, you can divvy up these responsibilities, can't you?
You can. I mean, ideally you'd have a couple of different people who can contribute to the social media. So for example, you could have someone at an open day who can take a couple of images for photography, et cetera, be responsible for that area. I mean, at the end of the day, parents really want to be engaging with the school. They really want to see what their children are doing on Facebook Live or Instagram stories. This is where they are, and these are the kind of things they want to see.
Yeah, so you're already one step ahead because your audience wants to see what you're trying to show them. That's the current parents at least. And the prospective parents, if they're interested and if they are actually considering your school, they're going to want to be seeing it as well. So you're already a step ahead of Lush there. Lush is trying to show everyone what they're selling, basically.
And the little primary school around the corner can say that they're ahead of Lush. We don't think it's too hard to do social well, or even at least sort of do it so that parents can get involved and join that community. It's about building a community. But okay, to a school marketer or to a principal that's going, you know what, no, we are stepping away from social, you're going to have a solid replacement to fill that bridge and that gap, aren't you? So activations is something that we can look at as potentially a replacement.
Completely, because I think it comes back to community engagement, which is really very valuable for a school because it's all about engaging with your demographics in the community. It doesn't necessarily have to be something very expensive, but it's something that's definitely worth doing as an alternative as well.
And if you're doing sort of your open days, you can maybe make them a bit more community minded. So you have sort of a festival day where you're celebrating all the amazing things that are going on in your school or your college, and then invite sort of prospective parents and external communities in. But yes, social, we're big advocates for it. It's very cost effective, and you can, with a little bit of attention, you can really foster a beautiful community on there. So check out the articles and let me know what you think. Obviously you can send us an email, smc@image7.com.au. It's an interesting take, and it's interesting to see some brands starting to move away from social. So right, let's move on to the deep dive.
This is SMC. It's insight applied.
And we are now onto the deep dive. So as I mentioned at the start of the show, for this week's segment, we are talking about prospectuses. And so for this topic, we are joined by our current resident expert, Em, who has, you've been very recently involved in some prospectuses.
Yeah, it's good to be here. Yeah, thanks for having me. Yeah, I've been working on a few prospectuses at this current stage, actually. And yeah, they're interesting. Lots of schools have different approaches to them. But yeah, obviously before getting to work on a prospectus, there should be a few key points to consider, like establishing your objective purpose.
Yep, cool. All right. So establishing your objective and your purpose, let's take a step into that now. So you're now looking at your prospectus and you're going, right, how am I going to make a beautiful prospectus for our school and college? So let's start with setup. So right before we've even got any words on page, we've taken any photos, or we've got the imagery, we're going to talk about layouts and page plans. So what are the kind of typical layouts, Em, that schools might want to consider when they're starting to plan their prospectus?
Yeah, so firstly, you should probably conduct sort of an audit to assess what you've got in your current prospectus and determine whether you're sort of going to be doing a complete redesign of your design and your copy, or whether you're just doing a simple refresh. But generally, a prospectus should include sort of your key points would be your message from the principal or your headmaster, purpose and values, things like your mission, and then obviously your key academic and co-curricular programs.
And at this stage, I suppose you want to be flagging quite early any sort of real selling points from the school and for the college. So you're starting to identify, put that little asterisk to go, you know what, our extracurricular side is really strong, or we're really strong on the academic front. So we're going to want to put away a couple of pages for that.
Yeah. And also with that is you should also be looking at what your competitors are doing. How can you do it better? What are their standout programs and what can you offer that they don't?
Okay. So you're starting to get an idea and a bit of a feel for the sort of structure of your prospectus, but then, and obviously the page plans that flow into that. But Rita, when you're putting together a great prospectus, it's important to not have too many chefs involved, isn't it? You do want to keep that consistency of voice.
It is. I think it's really important, and just making sure that you're going through all the right stages of proofing your content, et cetera. But absolutely, you need that level of consistency and ideally less people involved.
Okay, so you've got less people involved, but also you've got deadlines to manage. So John, when it comes to the publication deadline sort of angle, you need to make sure that you're pretty planned and pretty on top of when things are due.
Yeah, definitely. This is a classic one with publications. It's so important that you make sure all the contributors and everyone that's putting something into your prospectus has to have things in on time. Otherwise, the entire process gets held up.
Especially, I suppose, if you're looking to have your new prospectus ready and raring for an open day or something like that, you're going to have to work really well to make sure everything's going to be delivered on time. You've got everything in order. Obviously, the photo shoots can be well in advance, which we'll talk about in a second. But you need to be organized.
Of course, you've always got your photo shoot done well in advance.
Yeah. Okay. So set up. We've got the layout planned. We've got an idea on what the page plan's going to look like and also sort of the deadlines. Anything else we've kind of missed on the setup side?
Yeah, a key thing would be, not many schools do it, but it's sort of something you should always consider, is creating a production schedule. This obviously it can be quite detailed, but obviously organization is key with these types of publications, especially because they can be so ongoing for such a long time. But it just makes sure all your contributors are submitting on time and you get to print on time as well.
Perfect. Okay, so the setup's all done, we've planned it all out and we've got the idea and the deadlines and that kind of stuff. Now we're moving to the actual sort of the meat of the prospectus. We're talking about the content, we're talking about the imagery and a general sort of sense on what this sort of publications really feel like. So imagery. Are we going to have a photo shoot specifically for prospectuses? We know that quite a lot of schools do.
Yeah, imagery is so important for any sort of publication that you are putting out to the general public. It's really important that when you do a photo shoot that you're not just thinking of the day-to-day shots that you'd like to cover for all your years, say for example year K-12, also take into consideration your publications.
So hopefully whenever you do your photo shoot, whether that be every year or two or as often as you need to do it, when you're taking the photos and when you're discussing and planning with your photographer, you'd be thinking, where are these photos going to go? How can they fit in our publications, our prospectuses? This is where you start planning for prospectuses and yearbooks and that sort of thing.
So obviously when you're looking at your photos, you want to make sure that you've got a mix of portrait as well as landscape. And then also talking about your covers and your section covers, because that's really going to open you up in terms of sort of the creativity, the amount that you can apply to your prospectus. So what other things can you be looking for on an imagery side, Em?
It'd be good to also consider diversity, a mix of ages and gender, also getting kids or students together in groups so you're not limited in single shots. Also think about your cover, what image are you going to be using on the cover. You don't want to use a photo of two girls if it's a co-ed school, things like that. You just sort of need to delve deep and consider everything.
Yeah. And I suppose if you've got like really great facilities, then you want to be making sure you've got sort of those wide angle, or as long as you're making the most of your environment. Likewise, if, for example, you've got a facility that is due for an upgrade, then maybe take more of the shots outdoors and make the most of sort of your leafy environment. So you've got those kinds of options when you're planning, so that when you get to your prospectus and you're dropping in those images, that you've got a real sort of bank of quality images that you can rely on. Okay. So imagery, I think we've roughly covered. Copy. So we're now talking about the text. This is where, John, consistency is absolutely key.
Yeah, it's like anywhere that you have copy within your messaging, or like on your website or in other publications or in letterhead, anything. Like, the copy has to be consistent and it has to show your school's messaging. And you got to think, like, is the language used? Is it the language that your school uses? Is it what is going to attract your prospective parents?
Yeah. So at this particular point for this publication, you need to be thinking about, what is a prospective parent thinking? You've got to be answering those questions. Rita, if you're thinking about what a parent's going to talk about, ideally you're going to have a language and a key messaging guide, but obviously not all schools have that. But what kind of things can schools look at to draw inspiration from?
Yeah, I think it's a good idea to check out what other schools are doing, but also to establish what you want to say and who you are. And as you mentioned earlier, actually, it is really important, if you don't have a written communication guide or a style guide or a language guide, I think it's a really important step to establish one, so that, you know, the way you're expressing yourself is consistent.
So when you're looking to build that consistency, what are the other things and the other final things that you can be looking at to making sure that you've got, right from the start of the prospectus to the end, you've got a consistent sound and a consistent feel to the prospectus?
Yeah, what a lot of schools think they should do is try to include everything in their prospectus. It's best to, rather than trying to put everything in and cramming the prospectus, is just to include your key points.
Yeah, cool. When you get to the proofing stage as well, you want to make sure that you've got, maybe identify a couple of key people within the college who know your school inside out and back to front, and they know sort of the language that's typically used, so that they're picking up on the same mistakes.
Definitely. And something we do here in-house, which is extremely important, is get a fresh pair of eyes to look over the content, so that you've a couple of different pairs of eyes looking at it, so that nothing is missed.
Ideally, you'd have a brand leader or sort of someone who can play brand police. And obviously, you're looking for typical grammar mistakes and spelling errors. That's obviously standard, but you also need someone who's going to have that overarching knowledge of the school.
Completely. The whole content needs to flow. And as Em pointed out earlier, it's really important to make sure that it's not just too copy heavy, that you're breaking it up into blocks, paragraphs, so that it's easier to read with imagery.
So one other final thing that we were talking about is making sure that you don't sort of accidentally date your prospectus. And this can come back to the copy or can come back to the imagery by including a timeline or a very important date in the school's sort of history or upcoming event. You could outdate your prospectus.
Yeah, that's right. There's lots of little things that you might not realize that could date your prospectus, like little features in images. Like, is there a badge that a student's wearing that says 2018 head girl or something like that, when actually it's now 2019? Do you have, you know, a little printing date on the bottom right hand corner of your prospectus? Yeah, it's tons and tons of little things that people won't consider that will actually show when the prospectus was made.
Okay, so you've got great copy, you've got great imagery, it's been proofed well, you've got a good layout. Right, now we're actually looking to get a hard copy in our hands, and we're talking about printing and the finishing. So I suppose the number one point that runs across everything is selecting a specialist who knows prospectuses or who knows school publications, so they know what they're looking at. So when we're looking at sort of the finishing options, schools can have that, have a wealth of choice of whether they're going to go gloss or matte. I mean, what are the typical things that you might be looking at?
Yeah, a few years ago, gloss was very popular, and now schools are leaning towards matte and a more sophisticated feel. It's important to get mock-ups from printers. That's the key. Go to a few different printers, ask them for examples, get the actually feel for the prospectus before just going ahead with one quote. I think that's the most important thing, and then you can actually understand what you your school needs.
Yeah, okay. And then so, I mean, we've seen a couple of prospectuses that have a beautiful finish, but actually after a period of time, I think it had a bit of a matte kind of satiny kind of finish. And it was beautiful, but after a period of time, the oils that were coming from the reader started to leave little prints on the publication. So that's something that you want to bear in mind, and ideally someone who's seen a lot of publications will have that experience.
That's it. I think it's really important not to assume that the printer has experience working with prospectuses and knows what's best. Go to someone who has dealt with prospectuses or yearbooks, etc. before.
Okay. And then when we're looking at obviously outputting, everything's there. We want to be making sure that we don't just have a hard copy, but also we've got things suitable for the web.
Yeah, it's definitely worth creating a digital version to be able to place on your website. A lot of parents are going to be, you know, they're not going to be able to come into your school and pick up a hard copy. A vast majority will be looking through your website and they'll want to see something digital, download a PDF. So it's worth putting something up there.
There's some really nice sort of online tools that you can also get for sort of doing a magazine style, can't you?
Yeah, it's an upcoming trend, especially in Australia. Over the past few years, it's really taken off. It's actually uploading the prospectus as an online magazine, which reflects a book, so you can actually flip the pages across. Some schools are actually choosing to do this now rather than printing, so it's saving costs. Obviously, that's going to take a while for schools to come around to do, because having the prospectus in your hand is
ideal.
Yep.
Well, thank you very much, Rita and Jiggles. That was a solid deep dive on prospectuses. We are now going to get stuck into our question of the week, and we're talking about LinkedIn. So right, let's move right along.
This is SMC. It's Insight Applied.
And for this week's question of the week, and this comes from Tracy in Queensland, and it's actually a topic that we haven't really spoken about much on the podcast at all. We're talking about LinkedIn. So Tracy's question was, our board has asked us to investigate LinkedIn. Where should we start? Really good question. We talk about Facebook a lot. We talk about Instagram. We talk about Twitter and YouTube. But LinkedIn is sort of the one that kind of sits off to the side. Really, the reason behind it is because it's got a very kind of corporate background. That's the reason. It's the professional network, isn't it? That's why kind of LinkedIn started. We'll run through a couple of reasons of things to think about if you are looking to move to LinkedIn, or at least integrate it to your school's content. For me, the first thing is strategy. If you are going to move to LinkedIn, or if you're going to take on any new social platform, you've got to have a real plan and a real reason why you're on there. Rita, one thing that we were talking about was LinkedIn can be great if you're looking to attract new staff or new personnel.
Certainly can. I mean, I've used LinkedIn in the past. Particularly, there is an option, different levels of subscription as well to LinkedIn, which can be quite costly, but it can be a great way to showcase your organization and attract new staffing members and recruiting.
When you're talking about the school on LinkedIn, it is, as I said, it is that more sort of professional angle. So you're really talking to alumni, you're talking to exec, potentially new sort of new members for your board. It's got that professional aspect. So it's more about sort of the structure of the college. It's less sort of a day-to-day, this is what's happened, in the same way that Facebook or Instagram would be. But John, something that we've seen a couple of times for schools is using the platform almost similar to Twitter, that they use it more as a thought leadership angle.
Yeah, this is an interesting one. I think it can be a great platform to develop maybe leaders within your school, maybe the principal or business manager or head of primary or whatever, whoever it may be, develop them as a thought leader, and that in turn helps advertise the school in a way.
Yeah, and I suppose talking about the advertising, it's not as cost effective as Facebook and Instagram, is it?
It's not. No, it can actually be quite costly. Again, I have used it in a past life more from a corporate kind of perspective, and it can be very effective. But to be honest, I think it's a pretty big investment for schools and not necessarily the people you want to be targeting.
So Tracy, if you are sort of going to be going back to your board about yes and no, we're going to go onto LinkedIn, I think be really clear about why you're going on and knowing the kind of content that you're going to be putting up and who you're talking to, because as we harp on that, you need to be where your audience is. And if you're moving to LinkedIn to talk to a demographic that aren't using LinkedIn properly, or they aren't using it sort of consistently, then you need to talk about whether you're going to be saving time avoiding it.
Yeah, that's exactly right, Charlie. I just want to reiterate that fact. If you don't need to be on there, and if it doesn't help your strategy, or if your board are just saying, we should be on LinkedIn, I saw another school was on LinkedIn, we should be on LinkedIn, why aren't we on LinkedIn? It's definitely worth questioning, is it going to be helpful?
But as we said, if it is, then that's great. You just got to choose what's right for your school. Okay, thanks very much for the question, Tracy. If you've got any more questions, then please feel free to tweet us at @smc_podcast or send us an email to smc@image7.com.au, and we'll try our best to answer them.
This is SMC. It's insight applied.
And to our final section, which is our rants and raves, and we'll be whipping through this one really quickly. And this is actually a rant, and this comes from an article talking about SEO health checks that everyone should be doing. This is from Luke Budker, probably completely butchered that name. And this comes from Marketing Profs. And so, yeah, so Luke, it runs through 10 different items that, in his opinion, you need to be doing for your website, in some cases weekly, in others monthly, quarterly, or sort of every 6 months. We ran this list past a few different people in the office and kind of debated it. And we thought, great list and great content, but actually for schools, a lot of it is absolute overkill. So starting us off, so Search Console. So Luke's saying that this is a weekly check you need to be doing. Obviously Search Console tying into Google to making sure that you're seeing what the quality of results that you're getting. Yes, it provides great insights, but for a school, weekly is going to be absolutely excessive. Monthly or quarterly is going to be absolutely fine. We don't want to be tinkering with the website too much. Ideally, we've got that solid build. We've done our homework, and yes, you're updating content and that kind of stuff, but structure is something that should roughly stay the same. Google Analytics is the next point. Luke says this should be a monthly check, but Rita, we use Google Analytics quite a lot, don't we?
We do. I mean, it's something you can certainly dip in and out of and keep an eye on how your pages are performing, etc. But I wouldn't be overly concerned unless you're making radical changes quite regularly, which generally a school will not be doing.
Yeah, I mean, something like quarterly, it would be absolutely fine. Or if you're running a specific campaign, absolutely keep a keen eye on your Google Analytics. John, the next couple, sort of, we're talking about meta tags. I mean, one of these, Luke says, should be monthly. The other should be every 6 months. For a school, what's realistic for them?
Yeah, your meta tags and your metadata, this is again, like for a school, it's something that you're going to set when you're creating your website and when you're creating landing pages, web pages. And realistically, that's not at all something you're going to need to check nearly that regularly. It's really, that's wildly excessive for a school.
Yeah. I mean, I think the reason why we're ranting about this is that we know that SEO, schools can get really het up upon it, and it could become a bit of an issue where it doesn't actually need to be. Obviously, get that quality advice when you are setting up your page and you're doing all that content, but a lot of this stuff is going to be complete overkill.
Yeah, I think it's really important to note that you can overanalyze, give things time to run, you check in on them every quarter, every 6 months, but you know, give landing pages time to sort of run their course.
Yeah, I think with the SEO especially, like as a whole, do a bit of your homework when you're setting up, set up well, make sure that you have the basics of the SEO down. But realistically, as a school, you could spend hours a week updating things to when you really don't need to be, because your demographic is likely all around you as a school.
There are a couple of final points. I mean, these ones which we're looking at where Luke says we need to be sort of checking every 6 months. If you've got some decent WordPress plugins, assuming you are using WordPress as your CMS, that you can actually, a lot of that stuff will be taken care of. So please have a read through, but do not get bogged down in it. It's not something that we think is a weekly or monthly check. As we said, if you're running a campaign or if you're running something, then keep an eye on it. But yes, that is our rant for this podcast.
This is SMC. It's Insight Applied.
So that brings us to the end of episode 155 for SMC. I will no longer be harping about the 2019 social media survey, as we will be wrapping this up very, very soon. So please make sure that you have taken part. You can head along to, I think it's image7.com.au/survey to take part, or check out the show notes and the link will be in there. So if you're listening from the Image 7 website, why not pop over now to your favorite podcast player for your fortnightly dose of school marketing and communications goodness. Search for SMC, School Marketing and Communications. As always, if you have any questions, comments, deep dive topics, rants or raves, whatever it is, then you can get in touch with the show at smc@image7.com.au or tweet us at @SMC_podcast. So that's it for this episode of SMC from Rita Jiggles and myself, Charlie. Bye.
Goodbye.
For now.
See ya.